I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people about motherly wisdom, preserving our musical heritage, and turning a rare astronomical event to spiritual purposes. Join us. Sit back and enjoy some free expression. Those of us with mothers who grew up during the Great Depression and World War II knew that Mom wasn't easily fooled. Right was right, wrong was wrong, and some ideas were just plain stupid. With things as morally confused as they are today, who couldn't use that kind of sound motherly guidance? Teresa Tomeo reflects on the practical outlook of her mother, Rosie, in her book, Everything's Coming Up Rosie, 10 Things My Feisty Italian-American Mom Taught Me About Living a Godly Life. Teresa's spoken with us before, and she's taking a few minutes out from her busy broadcast schedule right now to reflect on motherly wisdom. Teresa, good to speak with you again.
Hey, Bill. Great to talk to you, as always.
Well, women of your mom's era had seen a lot of life and experienced their share of challenges, and that gave them some advantages which today's parents could use in the current environment, don't you think?
I think so, and I think it was a lot of really, really great common sense. I mean, it was really street theology, as I say in the book about my mom, and it's very scriptural if you think about it in terms of, you know, what they gave us, the very basics of common sense and really good in terms of discipline when we needed it. And unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people have that anymore, as you said in your introduction, because we haven't grown up with that, because the world really in a post-Christian society, and there are such basic moral things that aren't basically moral anymore for people. So they're missing a lot, I believe. And that's why I wanted to write the book, because I think it would give parents encouragement, but also people maybe who did not have that kind of a parent growing up, but are longing for, you know, just getting back to common sense.
Yeah, you said something there that I think is key. I mean, Mom basically had the whole society at her back. She was calling on a whole set of moral assumptions that were common currency then, but that aren't that way now.
No, and it's interesting because Archbishop Vigneron from the Archdiocese of Detroit, when he wrote his letter, Unleash the Gospel, he talks about the fact that where things that were accepted about marriage between a man and a woman and the way you treat people and the whole relationship thing and so much more in terms of, for example, what we're watching on TV, just the culture overall is so different. There were certain things that were expected and accepted. And so it was as if the whole world was in line with us and what we taught for most of us for Christians. But that's not the case anymore. It's just the opposite. So in addition to just the main challenges of raising children, period, you have a culture which is really against Catholic parents and Christian parents. So it's a whole different ballgame now.
You present your mom as a woman who had a sort of earthy Catholicism and who didn't take any nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
but
as a matter of fact, it's so funny because when I see children talking back to their parents, all I could think about is my mother. There's no way she would tolerate that. When I got caught dating a guy I wasn't supposed to, he was 17 and I was only 14, and I went behind her back, and she said, I have eyes in the back of my head, and I'm not going to start hitting you, because if I start hitting you, I'm never going to stop. And she grounded me for, I don't know, maybe 20 years at that point. But you know, she was right. Moms do have eyes in the back of their head. Somehow God put them there under the hairline so they could see things. But yeah, she didn't tolerate it, and we knew. I always pushed the envelope. I was very feisty. I still am, but I never got very far. I tried, but it didn't work too well for me.
Yeah, they had a certain relationship with the church, too. Maybe it was an immigrant thing, but it was a culture that was in their bones somehow.
Yeah, see, my family is originally from, and you know this, having worked with me for many years at Ave Maria Radio, my family is originally from New Jersey, and my grandparents, right. My mother's parents, both immigrated from Italy when they were very young, as did my father's parents. So I'm second-generation Italian, but that Italian upbringing, because the church was very strong for them, my grandparents in Italy, and then they carried that over with their children when they moved to New Jersey. And I can remember my mom telling me stories at Lent and at Christmas time, how they used to visit all the different churches of all the different nationalities, because back then, in the cities, each corner had a different parish. There was the German parish, the Italian parish, the Polish parish, the Russian Orthodox churches. So it was a very beautiful and eclectic representation of faith, and it meant a lot to them because it was right there in their own backyard. And so they grew up with those very basic, moral Catholic principles that were pretty common. And then that started to wane, in the 60s and the 70s, obviously. And then my parents moved to Michigan when I was 5 years old. And even though I went to a very wonderful Catholic grade school, the culture was really pulling at us. And so I think it was super important for parents of their era, not the baby boomers, but the greatest generation, in World War II, as I talk about in the book, they really had to cling to that because things were starting to fall apart rather quickly.
Hmm. What kinds of topics do you cover in the book that you got from your mom's wisdom?
Well, what I do is I take some of the sayings I grew up with, like the first one, which I think is so helpful because a lot of people don't know how to deal with suffering. I mean, I think we saw a lot of that with fear during the COVID years. So if you go through the book, they're all actual sayings of her that my sisters and I heard growing up. So the first one, and I write it in her accent because she's still, bless her heart, she's gone 4 years now in March, and she never lost her accent. She had it till the day she died. But the first one, she says, offer it up to God and put it at the foot of the cross. So the way she said it was offa, A-W-F-A, it up to God and put it at the foot of the cross, C-R-A-W-S-E. My mom had a great devotion to the Blessed Mother, and so the second chapter is another saying she would always mention to us. The Blessed Mother, M-U-T-H-A, is watching you. Listen to your mother. It's not all peaches and cream, So when I look at these sayings, I would roll my eyes, right, when my mom would say them to me and my sisters when we were growing up. Well, here we go again. Here's the old offer it up, right? But then if you think about it, how timely and how evergreen they are, Bill, if you look at suffering and how much people need to understand that God can bring good out of suffering. And what does that mean? What do we do with the suffering when we get it? How do we make it worthwhile and beneficial, not only for ourselves but others? And the relationship with the Blessed Mother. The Blessed Mother is watching us, and we're her children, and that's really super important to develop that relationship. Listen to your mother, and I talk about not only the Blessed Mother and your own mother, but Holy Mother Church. And then it's not all peaches and cream, It sounds so simple, but it's huge because how many people don't know what to do when things don't go their way? I mean, we've got a whole generation of a lot of people that think, well, it's all about me. And I'm all that in a bag of chips. And if it doesn't happen, then I'm going to have to scream and yell and stomp my feet to get exactly what I want. They're not used to dealing with the ups and downs of life. So these very, simple, plain Jersey Italian sayings with which I grew up are so applicable to what we're dealing with today.
I love the way you reproduce her verbal mannerisms. I grew up in the Philadelphia area, and the accent is a little bit different there, but that East Coast twang is kind of in common.
Yeah, and the East Coast edge, people from the East Coast have that kind of little tough, right. When the going gets tough, the tough get going attitude about them. And I think that in many ways, that's healthy. Some people might be put off by it, but that, we're going to get through this no matter what type of an approach, especially with a strong ethnic community such as the Italians or the Polish Americans or the Irish Americans from the East Coast. I think that's a beautiful thing. But yeah, all these chapter titles are things that I heard growing up. And this one, chapter 6, is really funny. If you want a pool, go fill up a garbage can. She actually said that to me and my sister because we were complaining about not having a pool. So the point of that story is, hey, sorry, kids. You can't always have what you want. We can't afford a pool, so make the most of what's around the house. Go fill up a garbage can, and we did. We actually did it. Didn't work out too well because we put the water in first, but she was trying to tell us that you're not going to get everything just because you want or wish for it.
Yeah, perspective. That's, right. That's what it all comes down to. Well, where can people find this book?
Oh, it's very easy. They can go to my website, teresatamio.com, under the book section. It's not available on Amazon, and Ave Maria Radio also has it as their bookstore.
Well, you are a presence, T. You're on the radio every morning with your show Catholic Connection. You show up on EWTN. You're everywhere.
I'm trying. I haven't gotten the gift of bilocation yet. I'm working on that, but I don't think that's going to happen. But anyway, we can always hope.
The book is Everything's Coming Up Rosie, 10 Things My Feisty Italian-American Mom Taught Me About Living a Godly Life. Teresa Tamio. Hey, T, thanks very much for taking a couple
of
minutes.
Thanks, Bill. Great to talk with you.
There was a time when popular songs conveyed images of love, happiness, fond memories, even sadness. They were often humorous, often sentimental, sometimes exaggeratedly so. They were patriotic. They were even religious, containing references to God and intended to be sung as much for entertainment as to express faith. There's a vast treasure trove of wonderful tunes inside that old piano bench, and Fred Field has dedicated himself to making sure they're not forgotten. He runs a fascinating website and YouTube channel called Sheet Music Singer that allows you to hear what those old pop songs sounded like. Fred, thanks for being with us.
Very glad to be with you. You know, it's a funny thing. I was not raised with this sheet music at all and the popular. I was in a church background, and so caught me by surprise when I discovered it.
Yeah, how did this whole thing begin?
Well, once upon a time, I was a fiddler. That goes all the way back to my high school time when I just fell in love with the fiddle and fiddling music. I was born in Kentucky, but I went to school in Michigan. And I just got really fascinated with fiddling. And that led me into an interest in square dance and the history of square dance. And through all of that fiddling and square dance, and that's a folklore kind of thing, I became aware of lots of older music, you know. I learned a lot of those, but I never realized that they had sources until somewhere around the year 2000, I was in a library and I stumbled across a bound volume published by Dover Publications, and it was a bound volume of sheet music from the 1800s. And I knew some of those songs, but I didn't know that we had printed sources for them that told us the exact tempo information and the key and the chords and the lyrics of verses and all of that kind of stuff, and who the lyricists were and the song composers. Here was something that just amazed me. To find all of this, it was 64 songs that were taken from the original sheet music.
Your collection now has about, I think your website says, about 5,000 songs in it. What time period is included there?
I have some before 1800, just in the terms of hymns and folk songs. I have one actual, what I would call, sheet music publication from 1795. A funny thing, Bill, is that our most popular and most viewed songs are from that 1800s period that I was telling you about. In fact, some of those in that original publication have gotten a lot of views. But the vast majority, just due to the access and also, I would say, the familiarity and the interest, are in the 1900s. As you may know, the 1920s was called the Roaring Twenties, and you know there was the Charleston and the Black Bottom and many, many other dances. And so the songs were sort of, you would say, maybe dancey, and they have a very endearing, lasting influence.
That's true, but there's a certain mindset today that assumes that anything old has to be dull or unsophisticated or corny. And yet many of these old tunes capture human emotions in ways that are poignant and insightful. They're really quite moving. Why do you think so much of this music is being ignored today?
Well, think about a school curriculum. You can't just keep adding and adding and adding. As the information age comes about and we have the internet, you can't just keep adding and adding and adding. Something's got to go. So eventually, you know, they're probably not going to be able to teach all of history, for example. Well, that's the same thing in music. It just keeps evolving and changing. And hopefully we want to have things like the Beatles that kind of captures a little bit of the British music hall. And then we want to have the rap into the hip-hop of today that captures and continues on some of the earlier forms of the cakewalk and the ragtime and the march and the into the Dixieland and then, you know, jazz. But as a matter of, I would tend to say, although there is some jazz still going, if you go to one of these music capitals like Austin or Nashville, you know, you'll hear some jazz. But by and large, I think it's kind of pretty much a thing of the past, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. There is an audience for jazz, but it doesn't seem to be as large or as prominent as it used to be. I'm of the baby boom generation, and I know that when I was a kid, a lot of these old songs came up in family gatherings and that sort of thing. My grandparents would sing them. My parents would sing them. I don't think that's the case now. I think a lot of this stuff has been forgotten, that young people now are not hearing this material.
Yes, and I always felt like the piano was kind of displaced by the guitar. Guitar is only six strings, and it's, I wouldn't say it's simple or easy, but guitar is comparatively has easier access, I think, than full piano playing.
Yeah, that's true. They say the guitar is easy to play, but extremely difficult to master, and I think that's the case.
I think maybe we lost the organ, which had a revival. The organ had a revival maybe in the 40s or 50s, but we've pretty much lost the organ now, and the piano is kind of on its way out. I know there's a lot of appeal in the old songs if people give them a chance. There's charm, and some of that sentimentality and nostalgia can still work its magic in the right situation. My channel does not really make performances, so to speak. I'm just trying to focus some attention back on what's there, what has gone on before, what is available now through these vast sheet music collections that have been donated to the universities. And, of course, the Library of Congress, ever since 1870, they have a copy of just about everything, because the Copyright Office, any song that is anything is going to be copyrighted for commercial purposes. And so the Library of Congress, they have the Copyright Office is part of the Library of Congress. And so ever since 1870, they've collected a copy.
Of course, a lot of those copyrights have long expired, and much of this material is in the public domain.
That's right. And YouTube takes care of that for me now, because every upload I make, they immediately somehow know if it has copyright. And you're right. Even up to the more modern period of, let's say, the 60s, some of those just haven't been maintained. Copyright exclusivity, so you can have access to them.
Now, your site is certainly a no-frills kind of presentation. It's basically, I assume it's you playing the piano and singing. Is that correct?
Mostly computer-generated piano notes. Those are MIDI files that sometimes it's piano players that make them, but they weren't played. They were more put in a note at a time, or maybe a chord at a time. And the good thing is that they're quite exact in accordance with the sheet music publication. So when we show and sing that, the piano accompaniment or guitars or trumpets or whatever's in there, it can be bells and occasionally a drum, those are accurate, just like the sheet music says to do.
Right. It gives you a real sense of what the material would have sounded like at the time it was created and first put before the public.
For me, even let's say I'm not a musician, I have access through the MIDI capability and the fact that we, on our website, and there's many, many other MIDI websites that give people the notes.
Well, you're doing something important. It's simple and basic, but you are really preserving these very important portions of our cultural heritage. I think it's a very worthwhile endeavor.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I just really kind of put one and one together and maybe another one and get two or three or four. I didn't create these original materials. I search and find, and I just put them together for people, and I hope to, my purpose is to bring awareness and appreciation and enjoyment of what these people from long ago have accomplished. You know, we really do have quite the world, it's not only the United States, the world has a quite a legacy that we can draw on.
Well, where can people find all of this material?
Well, just remember Sheet Music Singer, and there's the YouTube channel. So if you do a channel search at YouTube, just look for Sheet Music Singer, And we have a website where you can actually get the sheet music and the MIDI file and the lyrics, too. And that's sheetmusicsinger.com.
Fred Field, sheet music singer. Hey, thanks very much for being with us. Like I say, you're doing something very valuable here. I'd like to see it really, really become much more known and people turn to it. And maybe some of these old musical gems will be rediscovered and have a new life.
Well, thank you so much for being interested.
Throughout history, people have looked to the sky for signs of God's favor, for His mercy, for love of His creation. The Star of Bethlehem is the most famous instance, and of course there's the rainbow given to Noah after the flood. Well, whether or not everything we see above represents a divine message, great astronomical events undoubtedly provide us with opportunities to turn to God. And such a chance is coming up on April 8th of 2024, when North America will experience a total solar eclipse. Nomen Christi Apostolate, a ministry that's very concerned with the natural world of God's creation, has organized an effort to take advantage of this rare occurrence, and Kiara F. Matthews is here to tell us about it. Kiara, thanks for taking time to let us in on what's happening.
Thank you so much, Bill, for taking the time to speak to me about this.
Okay, there's going to be this pretty astounding thing, which happens rarely. What is it that you have organized?
So that was a beautiful introduction. We are taking advantage of this spectacular natural event to appeal to God for mercy at a time where we feel is a critical point in human history. Not only the United States of America, but the entire world is engulfed in various polycrises, which have in the past few years been escalating. We might also call them multi-front attack vectors, and they seem to be coming from every direction, temporally and spiritually, from within and from without. Whether you see this eclipse as a warning of God's impending wrath, or whether you just want to use it as a catalyst for praying for mercy and conversion, we're using this opportunity to do that. So we're calling it the Eclipse Pilgrimage of Mercy, starting Good Friday, March 29th, to April 13th. It just so happens that the day before the eclipse is Divine Mercy Sunday, and maybe that's not a coincidence. Maybe this is all in God's providence. And so we're calling for a massive praying of the Divine Mercy Novena throughout the United States. This eclipse starts in the Pacific Ocean, and then it goes to Mexico, and then the United States, and then it concludes in Canada. So it is specific to North America, but really the whole world should be looking at this, since the United States is obviously been the world's military power. What happens in the U.S. affects the entire world. So really, I don't think this is only significant for the United States. I believe it's a significant sign for the entire world to come to God, maybe at one of our last chances to obtain mercy and to mitigate God's wrath as we're falling into spiritual degradation and nuclear war is being openly talked about once again, as it was in the 80s. So the Divine Mercy Novena will be said, it's from Good Friday to April 6th, and then Divine Mercy Sunday is the following day, April 7th. The eclipse is April 8th. So that week, starting April 7th to April 13th, we're calling for a pilgrimage to holy sites across the land, across the United States, from sea to shining sea. We want to get people out of their homes and into the holy places where they live, or if you're traveling to the eclipse, find somewhere there. Could be a church. But we're trying to focus more on shrines or cathedrals or basilicas, places that maybe you don't usually go, to make this really something special and more of an effort. You can do the pilgrimage from April 7th to the 13th, but the actual eclipse is the 8th, which also happens to be the Feast of the Annunciation. Our Blessed Lady is all over this event in so many, many ways. And we're also calling for a full rosary to be prayed at your pilgrimage site. You can choose one site one day that week to pray the full rosary. Or if you want to go to several sites, you can do that. I'm going to San Antonio, Texas, with my family to all of the missions. There's 5 missions along the San Antonio River. And we're going to be praying the rosary at each mission, and that is our pilgrimage. We chose San Antonio because I do have family there, and also it's one of the best viewing locations for the eclipse. We actually live in New York. If people want to spread the word, they can visit our website and they can print out a PDF flyer, and they can also share via the internet.
What is that website? How can people get this information?
That's Nomen Christi. That means name of Christ in Latin. So that's N-O-M as in Mary, E-N as in Nancy, Christi.org, NomenChristi.org. You can also get on our email list and let us know if you've done the pilgrimage. That would be director@NomenChristi.org.
Well, this is quite an inspiration. It takes advantage of a noteworthy event and turns it to a great spiritual purpose. Chiara F. Matthews, Nomen Christi Apostolate.
Thank you so much, Bill. I deeply appreciate it. God bless you.
If you've been listening to these shows online but would like to hear them on the radio, tell your local Catholic station. Free Expression with Bill Castle is available for broadcast free of charge. Ask your Catholic station to contact us by email, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. That's BILLKASSEL, all one word, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. And don't forget to support your local station. In this time of censorship and so-called cancel culture, Catholic radio is becoming increasingly important as an alternative media source. Our programming is based on the Word of God and the teaching of His Church, and we bring you the factual, truthful information you aren't getting from the mainstream media. Support Catholic Radio. Your generosity keeps Catholic outlets on the air, and donations to broadcast ministries can be tax-deductible. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Curris provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.